Welcome to the Valley Outdoors Radio, brought to you by Vexus Boats, building dreams with an unequaled passion for excellence. And now, with our hosts, Eric Colson, Don Cleaver, and Ava LaRue.
Thanks for hanging out with us today, guys. It is the Valley Outdoors. We are the Valley Outdoors. Ava, good to see you.
It's good to see you, too.
Donald.
I'm here.
There you are. And here I is. My name is Eric, and we are, for the next, 20, 30 minutes or so, we're going to be entertaining or doing something, occupying your time while you're doing something or nothing.
There's optimism.
Well, you know, I'd rather set the bar low and everything is positive from there. A lot of good stuff coming up today, guys. We're going to talk a little bit about what's going on and pre-Olympic stuff, Don. Last week I held off. I'm glad I did. Big story this week. I'm telling you, the Olympics this year are going to be fantastic. Big Winter Olympics fan. We're talking about the Minnesota DNR, and of course, that's a big topic. What's going to happen winter for the regulations on Lake Mille Lac, and a lot more, including making sure you can get that grip and grin photo as good as you possibly can. Don, you know about those grip and grin photos. I know it, and Ava does too. Hey, you're going to want to know more. Hang tight. More Valley Outdoors coming right up. Eric Olson here, professional walleye tour champion, avid outdoorsman, and host of the Valley Outdoors Radio Show. Aquatic invasive species, or AIS, threatens not only our rivers and lakes here, but everywhere we boat. They come in many forms, and they love to hitch a ride to the next body of water on your boat or trailer. Join me to stop the spread of AIS by cleaning all weeds and aquatic material from your trailer before leaving the launch ramp. Drain live wells and clean areas that don't drain completely. Plus, don't forget to pull the plug. Clean, drain, dry. Together we can make a difference.
Does your family need a break from the daily routine?
Hello, I'm Dr. Spruce. If you or someone you know needs a healthy dose of nature, visit discovertheforest.org and trade in the big screen for the big blue sky by visiting a local park or forest near you.
Hiking, picnicking, swimming, orienteering, climbing, admiring wildlife, or inhaling fresh air may result in heightened creativity, feelings of joy, harmony, satisfaction, and a euphoria that can only be explained as oneness with the natural world.
Whoa. Good to see you guys.
Yeah, it's always
fun
to be here.
Ava? She's
yes,
busy.
Sir. I'm here.
She's busy typing with the double keyboard.
Well,
and
I'm trying to get your music bed pulled up
she's
now.
She's producing.
That's what I'm doing. Producing.
You're supposed to be talking.
I don't know
what
to say.
You normally don't have a problem with that.
I don't know what to say. I'm verklempt, I guess.
Okay, what are we talking about today?
Don, you got to prompt me. I'm just kind of warming up into the conversation. I got to have the right segues. There's a lot of complications that go on doing this, you know. You come in and play the big guy role, and then here I'm left holding the pieces.
Well, put them together.
Or picking them up.
Put them together.
I don't have enough glue. I don't have enough glue. Well, you know, across the Midwest, in the areas that we cover, there has been a significant lack of moisture, and it's one of the things that's really played a role and can play a role in what goes on with a lot of the fall bites that are going on. One of the things that you find on any body water pier, I mean, it's regulated by the dam, your flow below the dam. Otherwise, it acts like a lake, but the drawdown effect, how far they draw it down, where the bait fish are at, that kind of thing. Everything is affected by the flow unless you're in a regular lake. The bite in a lot of the lakes that I've been checking on have been quite good. So that's been a plus. The river bite that normally is absolutely spot on for fall has been one of these significantly off again, on again, as the river flow level is absolutely goose egg. It's not much of anything. We like to, it's called a flat pool. So you've got a 26-mile stretch from Red Wing all the way down to Alma. And when it's a flat pool, there's very little difference between the top and the bottom of the pool. And they maintain X amount to make sure you have barge traffic. And that's all it's maintained for. And
so not a lot of current.
Not a lot of current. No. And they can see, this is the weird part. You can have a level pool, you can have decent flow. If they're not opening, if they're open one of the gates or the preceding gates, if they have water coming, they'll drop it for fall. If they're doing, right now they had done that island project, and the islands that are dredging that kind of thing.
Right.
So the flow really affects where those fish go. Otherwise, they'll say, well, there's no reason to go really anywhere because I can go off into a backwater and spawn in a backwater. But generally, they go over the heaviest flow, which will be up towards the NAM. And it's been a challenge, to say the least, on most every person I've talked to, guides included. It's been a very difficult scenario. So that fall bite is just, it's frustrating. And of course, you know, we're looking at the weather that we had come in this week. With the snow across the Midwest, I think northern Minnesota, same thing. It kind of is looking like there's the waning of the fall fishing bite on that side of it. We may have a warm something, but from every indication I have, it's going to be cold, and colder during that first week of December. And, yeah, I mean, like teens for highs and overnight in the single digits already. So I think it's a kind of the thing where we talk about what's coming next is what it really is. Deer hunting should be good. We get a little snow on the ground, so that'll be helpful for that. And not for standing in a stand, but
it won't be long. The ice will be there.
Yeah, it's not going to take long. We're going to have ice. I don't know if you call it early ice. I don't know the actual time and frame of that. But nonetheless, one of the big things that comes up is we have the Olympics coming up, Don, speaking of
yes.
Snow. Big thing coming to the Winter Olympics, that's going to be going on. One big star to look at, a couple of them, I've talked about it before, Don, you guys give me crap for it, but Michaela Schifrin, the U.S. skier, she's a slalom specialist, which is the short radius turns. She has now dominated another slalom this last Sunday. Now she has her two convincing wins in the first start of the season. She's won the first two events, and not by small margins. And she is absolutely kicking it hard. It's unbelievable. Great to see. And Petra Vaholva, who is normally a strong competitor with Michaela, again, competition. She has a knee injury she had in January of last year, 2024. And that's kind of where she's at right now. She's absolutely knocking it out of the park. And also the local, and this is one of the big things, the local connection, Paula Moltzen, she finished fourth in the event, first event of the year. And she is also a slalom specialist and getting a lot of tips and tricks from Michaela. So I've never been more excited. Lindsey Vonn will be in the Olympics this year. It's going to be a banner year to watch snow sports. And, of course, your favorite sport,
well,
the
curling,
rock.
But I was going to mention Jesse Diggs will be competing.
Jesse Diggins.
Diggins will be
cross-country.
Cross-country.
And she is a perennial favorite, yeah. Which is super cool. So,
and in the world of curling, which my background goes
big thing.
Goes back, we're used to the Schuster rink. The last five Olympics representing the men's team, they got nudged out this year in the final game of the trials by the Casper rink, which is actually, I think he curls up in St. Paul, Minnesota.
That's awesome.
So
another local connection.
Yes.
A lot of fun stuff. There'll be a lot more that we'll be covering as we wind into the Olympic time frame in February. And we certainly hope you join us when that comes up. But hey, hang tight. We got a lot to cover this show, and we will be right back. Welcome back, you guys. Thanks for hanging in there and out of the break. And as always, we like to have you guys check us out on where, Donald?
TheValleyOutdoors.com.
And Ava?
Facebook as well, please.
Like us, please. Absolutely. A lot of good stuff going on the website with the interactive piece that we have, which is kind of cool when you're looking at doing something. Usually the DNR's put on some cool little seminars and things at various points throughout in various parks. And winter coming is no different.
That's right.
So, that kind of cool. Been trying to do this story for a long time, Don. I mean, let's say over a month and a half, 2 months, literally. And I pulled this out of the Outdoor News. Mike Schoonfeld does some really cool articles. I have to commend him on it. And this one is, I would say, spot on. I know you've when you think about it, Don, you don't get a chance to read the pre-notes that I take, but it's called Coping with Lure Addiction Requires Work. What's your lure addiction, Don?
My lure addiction is vintage fishing lures.
Okay.
And I was fortunate enough to probably 35 years ago start. I mean, nowadays it's starting out, you're probably collecting lures from the 40s, 50s, 60s. And there's a lot of them that are collectible, especially, I mean, condition is such a big factor. My collection is typically 1930s and older.
Yep.
At that point, it gets either really rare that you find something or really expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And so you don't add a lot. I probably haven't.
So it's just a different addiction type.
One of the reasons I like the vintage is because of the quality of craftsmanship that went into manufacturing these back in those days.
And the other thing is you don't lose them because you're never touching the water.
I have never thrown one.
See?
And the reason,
Ava?
The reason that a lot of them are
well,
rare.
I don't blame them.
Well, I blame him because that's the reason he's not getting out fishing. He's only thing he has is ancient old lures. Got to work on that.
No, I've got the new stuff. That's what I use in my boat.
Oh. All right, so let's change that topic then. Okay. Let's go. You've got and the antique lure thing is a big deal. I collect old outboards and yep. Not antique, but there's an era that I like in that late 40s, 50s time frame where that styling came in. So there's everybody has a concept that sure. You like that, right?
Yep.
So let's go modern. Let's go more what you're going to use on a day-to-day or you're going to go fishing. What's your addiction on that? What do you just never seem to stop buying more of?
Well, I mean, to start with, I don't do a lot of trolling or throwing crankbaits.
Right.
So I'm not heavy into buying new. So I kind of got to follow the trend, you know, if there's something new out there. There are so many choices today. You walk into a major bait shop and you're looking at a wall that's got 400 to 800 different lures hanging on the wall there.
And they're each meant to do what?
Yeah, catch a fisherman.
You got that right.
Well, and they work.
And the important thing here, Don, is how the article goes. Same concept for me. It's the same. I'm a jig guy. So I'll take every hair jig I can possibly find and keep going with it, right? So the story goes, we all own a multitude of lures. So if you imagine anybody listening, how many fishing lures you have? Some of you have a few. Some of you have a little bit. Some of you have more. And some of you, like myself,
have a lot.
Got some. And if someone pointed to the multitude of lures that I have and why I bought them, and this is where the point of the article comes in, I'm spot on with every one of these. It's one of five things. One, I caught a lot of fish on it and the color. I use them and the fish abuse them. Sometimes I lose them, but I don't want to be without one or without any spares. So when you buy one, you don't buy one.
No.
I buy four.
Because you know what happens?
The one
that starts biting is the one you lose. And you got to have a backup. Plus, every other guy in the boat wants what you got if you're catching them.
And they cost them dearly if they want one.
Yeah, right. I've literally had that happen. I was in Canada with a friend of mine that had a bait shop, and he was fishing with a Rapala, fairly short, kind of fat.
And, yeah, fat wrap, yeah.
And
or a wiggle wart, either one.
He literally was fishing with that. He had 13 walleyes in the boat, and I hadn't had a hit yet. So I said, "You don't have another one of those, do you?"
It'll cost you.
He said, "Sure." But I had a clip on the end of my line, and I put that on it, and I pulled it. I still didn't catch one. And I said, what am I doing different? We're in the same boat, pulling at the same speed, leaving the same amount of line out. I go, why are they biting on that side of the boat and they're not on this side? He goes, try tying your line directly to the lure. with what they call a Rapala knot.
Yeah.
So I did, and guess what happened? Little things like that can go from
great, zero to hero in a quick hurry.
Yep.
Okay, so number two, I've heard good things about a particular lure or color pattern. Works for others. It'll work for me. Okay, that's true.
Yep.
It looks good. I can imagine how it's going to look in the water, and I can imagine the fish absolutely tearing into him. In this case, he says in the article, buy two, I'll buy four. Okay. They were cheap. What fisherman can resist a bargain? I often spend $20 to buy a handful of unproven discount lures rather than $10 on the lure I use most often. And then it sits in your tackle box because you try it once for 20 minutes and it doesn't do anything. And then you know what? How does your tackle box collection go?
You need another tackle box.
You need, well, and I take care of it sometimes. If I have a co-angler in the boat in a tournament and it's a casting tournament, here. Devil's Lake, I had a gentleman with me. God bless his heart.
Why would you give him a lure that wasn't working?
Because he lost eight of the first lures I gave him in the trees. I wanted to make sure he felt like he was contributing. He actually caught two fish once the lure hit the water. That was the only challenge we had at that point. Here's another one. Number five. I couldn't resist it. I am a lure addict. I had to buy it. Now, this is what he says. It's, I don't buy lures just to collect them. I buy them to catch fish. Some do that job amazingly well, and some do amazingly poorly, which is very true. When I buy a proven lure, I tie it on the beginning of the trip and use it with confidence. After all, a coach doesn't put bench warmers in the game immediately. He or she uses a starting squad and hopefully gets the game started with a positive note. Agree?
Yes.
It's a confidence factor. No question about it. Mm-hmm. If you put a confidence bait on and they're not biting, what does it say? They ain't biting. Unfortunately, it's not true.
That's
you got to keep rolling. You got to try what's going to happen. Another point. If it works for others, it'll likely work for me. Possibly it could earn a place in my starting lineup. But it's not in my starting lineup. Only the first few trips it will get in the water. Only after a few fish have been caught. And why is that, Don?
I don't know.
Benchmark. So if you have you're catching fish on your starting lineup, you know you can catch fish on it.
Right.
And they're coming relatively easily. Time to start throwing the backups in. Because you need to know if they're going to be effective in that same way, same rate, same time, all those pieces and parts. If you throw it out and it's not catching, if it's a similar color or close to it, same similar action, then you know you can use it and you can mark it and put it into the go-to.
And if it's not, it goes in the timeout bin?
It goes in the timeout bin, yep, or the AAA. And the thing to keep – this is the other thing, too. There's a gentleman that's used to compete on the Wally Tour. He's out at out in the Great Lakes. And one of the things he found was that when you have a leader, you're running usually an 18-inch leader with a fly – with a treble hook for salmon and a trout, right? And you have a flasher. His, Russ Gahagan is his name, and he's been a great guy. I'll try to get him on here. And he competed on the Walleye Tour, but he jumped over and became an amazing, amazing salmon guy. Worked with Salmon Candy Company forever, which is a tackle company. And he said that because of the enzymes that are deposited on that leader, you need to have your go-to box, and you have it absolutely separate from everything else out there. You don't pull the line off it. You don't pull anything off it. You keep it all the same. And I had one this year exactly that. There was hardly any tinsel left on the fly, and it was still crushing fish. But that enzyme, when they fish swim up behind it and they're trolling, they get that apparently, and that's what happens. So, again.
Where does the enzyme come from?
The fish's mouth if you caught fish on it before.
Gotcha.
Yep. So a key piece to it. All right. Fight temptation. If I bought a lure just because it looks good, the temptation is to get it in the water as soon as possible and learn that a looks good lure to use when my A-list lures are doing great. Save it. Don't put it out yet. Catch fish. My opinion is, you know, sprinkle the infield a little bit. Sprinkle that infield and get some of those lures checked. A lot of things you want to look at, you can say, don't fix what's working, right?
Well, I mean, there's if you're in a tournament situation, I'm sure you're right. Very hesitant to.
Oh, and I won't because yeah. I've already spent 7 days checking out every bait, and there I've got my on-deck circle done. I have them hooked in the carpet in the front of the boat. If I break one off, my on-deck circle is good to go. Yeah. Or I have my tournament box that's good to go.
Yep.
That's the way you do it. You have them pre-tied even, and I don't have to switch out. So I have multiple avenues to switch. But again, don't fix what's working if you're in that situation where we're having a good time. We're not going to have to worry. I got plenty of this bait. And we're going to be good to go unless you want to really stretch and have some fun with it. Or you want to give one to your friend so he doesn't catch any fish so that you can now win the bet you may have with him and how many fish you're going to catch. The bingo, bango, bongo, first, biggest, and most. You know, mm-hmm. That's the usual solid bet to take. But just as a coach may put a rookie quarterback in the game in the fourth quarter when the team is 3 touchdowns ahead, that's when to test the rookie lure. When everything is just about wrapped up, I know when using it, fishing's great. It gives it a fair test. Catching fish with the new lure will be good, but if it fails to perform, that's more telling. If it doesn't catch any fish when the fishing's good, there you have it. Maybe it's not as good as I'd hoped it would be. Give it a few chances, and if it reliably catches fish, terrific. If it fails repeatedly, she gone and pass
what
it
if
on.
What if it performs better than you thought? What if it brings in the starting, last half hour of the
starting lineup. It's starting lineup all the way. Yeah. Now, here's the other thing. When you do get fish on a lure, do not put it back in the same box as all the other ones have the same color, shape, a shad wrap, number 7, purple decent. Don't put it back in that same box. There is a reason that it is catching fish. It may have a slightly different wobble. It may have a slightly different action, even though it's made the same way, same everything else. That is a key piece to it. Have a separate box. You do it with salmon, same idea. Do it with whatever other crankbaits you have. In fact, even with your slow death lures, whatever that might be, something may give it the right action. Size of spinner, something like that may be the key ticket to it. And I really think when it comes down to this thought process of the lure addiction, you can't help it. I can't.
Well, sometimes you got to have a budget.
Well, you do, you know.
Because last I checked, they haven't gotten any less expensive for the what you'd call the really good quality lures.
No.
A short story. I remember going out to Little Bay to Knock in late October one time, and I was at that time. I believe it was the PWT tournament trail that was going yep. on. And I got to know a lot of the guys on the trail. And they said, you know, they had out there that time of year because big fish were readily available for promo pictures. And because, I mean, the season has yep. been over with.
Yep.
So they invited me to come out there, and I did. And I got out there, and they said, you got to have the, I don't remember, was it? 7 shad wrap.
Number 7 shad wrap, yeah.
Blue and silver.
Blue chrome.
Yep. So,
and that was a foil finish bait that was absolutely the most killer bait you could ever possibly imagine.
So, of course, first bait shop you go into, there's a hole in that big wall of lures. There's a hole there. And guess what it was? So I go to the next bait shop. They had 4 of them.
That's
so,
gone.
So what's Don do? He buys all 4 of them. And the next day, we went out to use them, of course, and after we broke through the ice to get out to the open water, I think, I can't remember what pro I was out there fishing, not with in the boat, but they were there as well. He'd caught a 11-pound fish, and I was just hoping to get a 10, but we didn't, but we did catch. You know,
Baitanock is a big late-season fishery, and a lot of big fish come out of there.
Yeah.
Story come out of Lake Erie. We had a tournament going on, and we had one bait that was going tremendously well. I think we call it. It was pots and pans, or cheap sunglasses, or fried chicken. One of those colors. And we go to the Fisherman's Wharf. We roll in there, and I look in the, and right in front of me, the guy grabs 3 racks of the ones that are similar to it, pulls them off into the box, and away they go. So the guy that owns Fisherman's Wharf waits till he leaves. Guy walks out the door. He says, Eric, don't worry about it. opens up the bottom, pulls open four more boxes, stocks a shelf. How many do you want? I said, I'll take one of the rows. And he said, don't even bother putting them on the peg. You got more? Okay, I'll take them. So the other guy thought he bought them all out because he was doing a good thing. It didn't work. And, you know, so the bottom line really comes down to this. There's worse addictions to have. Know your limit. Know when to say when, but don't be afraid to keep after it and challenging yourself to really expanding what you're going to do. I think that's the biggest thing. Before we break, we're going to have to take off out of here. But Mille Lacs for this winter, I highlighted at the top of the show, they're going to stay at three walleyes, and it's going to be the same slot that we had earlier, which is a good thing, and we have no issues with that whatsoever. And
they'll be busy up there this year.
Yeah, it should be good.
I would think so.
Yep, it should be good. So the limit did not get anywhere near what the population should have been taken out of there. So there's going to be a good limit of fish. So we'll tell you what, that's it for us, for Ava, Don, and myself. I'm Eric. We are the Valley Outdoors. We hope you guys have a fantastic Thanksgiving week and really enjoy your time together. So hopefully we'll have that and good weather to go with it. Enjoy the outdoors. See you later.
Thanks for listening to the Valley Outdoors Radio, brought to you by Vexus Boats, building dreams with an unequaled passion for excellence. Catch us next week, same time, same place. Have a great day on the water or in the field.